Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you hear President Obama in that newscast from the Today Show talking back to people who think the response to the Gulf oil spill is inadequate? He said, no, it's not. And we're going to see if we can get that clip of the president to replay, defending the response to the spill rather than just being angry at BP or saying they're going to do something about the spill. Another development just in the last few minutes. Listen to this stat. The man who's overseeing the government's response to the spill says the cap on the damaged oil well is now keeping up to 462,000 gallons of oil a day from leaking into the Gulf. This is according to the AP just a couple of minutes ago. Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, he's the admiral who went out on the Sunday talk shows over the weekend and sounded like the tough guy on the spill. Admiral Allen said crews hope to increase the amount that's collected at the surface. He says BP is anticipating moving another ship into the area for that collection. He spoke at the White House, where he will be meeting with cabinet members. Allen also said the battle against the oil that's already in the Gulf now involves hundreds or thousands of individual patches of oil. He says small vessels in the area have been enlisted to help capture those patches using skimmers. And that's mostly what we're going to talk about right now, the response in terms of cleanup, because a lot of people are saying that, yeah, you're starting to cap the spill now, but there needs to be an army of cleanup crews, and they don't see them. But again, that statistic, if the AP has this right, Admiral Thad Allen says the cap on the well is now keeping up to 462,000 gallons of oil a day from leaking into the Gulf. Yesterday they were saying 10,000 or 11,000. Could there have been a 462,000 gallons a day leak? That would be much larger than any previous estimate. So let's talk about what's going on in the Gulf, and we'll talk particularly about cleanup efforts or the lack thereof. Brian Walsh is a staff writer for Time who's covering this, and Tom McKenzie is a spokesman for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Brian, Tom, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Brian Walsh from Time, are you as astonished as I am by this figure in this AP story from just a couple of minutes ago that Thad Allen might say the cap on the damaged well is now keeping up to 462,000 gallons a day from leaking into the Gulf?
Well, I think it's a measure of just how big this spill was. I mean, that's always been one of the, and remains to be the unanswered question. I mean, how much is really spilling out there? Of course, we saw that number jump from 1,000 barrels of oil a day initially from the company to 5,000, and now there's a government estimate that says between, I believe, about 12,000 and 19,000 or 12,000, 25,000 barrels. But many scientists say it's much higher. So if you're capturing this much, and that's a lot of oil a day, and you're still seeing a leak, which I think anyone looking at the web video would see, it indicates that there's potentially a lot more oil going into the Gulf of Mexico than we were led to believe, and that, of course, is only going to complicate cleanup efforts going forward.
That I'm still wondering if this is a misprint on this brand-new AP copy, because 462,000 gallons a day just dwarfs anything we've heard before, so we will try to get some confirmation on that. I want to replay the clip of President Obama that we had in the NPR News at the top of the hour, challenging those who say the response has been inadequate.
The fact of the matter is there has not been an idea that is mentioned out there by any of the critics that we haven't evaluated, and if it was going to work, we would have done it.
So if you saw the president on the Today Show, Brian, do you know if he was addressing the response to the cleanup as well as the response to the leak? Because this is the latest turn in the anger that I'm hearing, that while they are working hard on stopping the leak, that too little has been done with respect to actually cleaning up the oil that we know is there and preventing it from doing, you know, the most damage that it might do.
I should say, actually, just a quick math check on that 462,000 gallon number. That actually equals about 11,000 barrels of oil. So,
it's gallons a day. That's why. Gallons.
Yeah, so that's important. This number gets put as sort of used interchangeably, but it is a bit confusing. But so that 11,000 barrels of oil a day is still a lot. I mean, that's almost capturing all of the very bottom estimate. But there's still a lot more to go. And I mean, you can imagine that's 500,000 gallons almost. That's just only being captured. So there's a lot of oil going into there.
Right. But that's, again, the difference when we talk in two different measures, 462,000 gallons, which is what the AP story reported, is about 11,000 barrels. So that's the same as the estimate that they were using yesterday.
The low, yeah, exactly. I mean, that looks to be about as much as they can get. And, of course, the ship that they're pumping this oil up to can only, I believe, process about 15,000 barrels a day. So they're really limited until they bring in some additional capacity, which they're looking to do at the end of the week, the weekend, to get any more oil, really. So, which is another question. I mean, if they were, they certainly had time to prepare this this method, this containment method, and yet to not be ready to deal with as much oil as was there, I think is something's wrong there.
And before we get to Tom McKenzie on how to clean an oil-soaked bird, what about the response in general? You know, maybe our listeners want to take that challenge from the president. He said, if anybody has a better idea, come forward with it. Listeners, how about some of your ideas for what kind of response is needed to clean up the spill or prevent it from getting on to more birds and more beaches and putting more people out of work and soiling the earth more? How about your ideas, and we'll send them right to the White House, for mobilizing to clean up the spill as effectively as necessary? 212-433-WNYC. And I'm serious about this. Call in with your ideas for maximizing the cleanup effort. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Walsh from Time Magazine, what is being done in terms of the response, in terms of cleaning up, in terms of stopping the oil from getting onto beaches and onto birds, et cetera?
Well, the main method, I mean, first starts with using chemical dispersants at sea and actually under the water to try to break up the oil, spread it out a bit more, make it a little easier to clean up. So, I mean, you've seen more than 1 million gallons of dispersant applied to the oil in various places, which brings its own toxicity concerns as well. And then once you're still out to sea, there's attempts to sort of boom off as much or sort of gather as much of the oil as possible, and then you can burn it off. That's one option that's been done a few times and kind of eliminate it that way. And then mostly what you're trying to do is protect the shoreline, and especially sensitive marshes, wetlands, as much as possible using physical barriers. I mean, this is really not that complicated. You put out shoreline boom. I've seen it. It kind of looks like you can imagine like the lane dividers in a swimming pool. That physical barrier, usually that's there to stop the oil, hopefully. Beyond that, there's often what's known as absorbent boom. That's kind of looks like floating styrofoam foam that can actually soak up some of the oil. So you can often tell if an area has been hit before, the outer layer of the boom has been hit, and then you see the absorbent boom is almost black. And then it's just trying to literally vacuum up or clean up the oil as much as possible off beaches and marshes. The problem is, especially when it comes to wetlands, it's extremely hard to get the oil out once it's in there. I mean, you can imagine it's like a sponge. It's very different than the kind of rocky beaches we saw with the Exxon Valdez, where you could actually maybe do some cleaning. So, honestly, I mean, this is an enormous challenge. You're talking about thousands of miles of coastline, often very jagged, very marshy. That's a lot to defend against, and Thad Allen compared this a bit, you know, to an insidious enemy that's constantly changing form. It's a bit like a guerrilla war. It's not really like defending against a full-out invasion. It's like the enemy, the oil pops up in one place, and then it'll move somewhere else with the current. So that's enormously, enormously challenging.
He is using a lot of military analogies about the enemy being spread out and all these different globules and stuff. Would an army of people help to continue the military analogy if they mobilized hundreds or thousands of volunteers or paid employees to go beach to beach? Would that do anything? Is there a manpower issue here?
It might help somewhat, but it depends on where you're going. Again, maybe with straight off beaches, it would be a little bit easier to control that. But I mean, if you're talking about wetlands like in Louisiana, where it was last week, it's potentially that you could do almost as much damage by having hundreds of people stomping around rather sensitive areas, you know, moving sand, trying to clean it up as the oil itself would do. I mean, that's the problem we're facing right here. And I think there are complaints that this is not being organized well enough, and it's hard even to get a sense of that's true or not, because, I mean, certainly you could have one area that's not getting enough people, another area that's getting more than enough people. The challenge really is that you do need an overall guiding force, and that's what the Coast Guard should be doing now to try to guide this response as much as possible. And, you know, I mean, I think they're doing as best an chance as they can, with the understanding this may almost in many ways be almost an impossible effort.
Tom in Huntington has an idea for mobilizing to clean up the spill. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I have an idea. All of the ideas up to now sound idiotic to me, and so what I propose is to take the CEO of British Petroleum, I forget his name.
His name is Tony Hayward.
Tony Hayward. Soak him in the oil, get him nice and wet, bring him up, bring him out like a bounty quicker picker upper, and put him back in and bring him up until either all the oil is gone or he and his co-criminals, I guess you could say, can figure out a way to stop this crime from persisting.
Tom in Huntington suggesting Tony Hayward, human sponge. And actually, Brian, the president was asked by Matt Lauer on the Today Show this morning about Hayward's past comments that, quote, I want my life back, that the Gulf was, quote, a big ocean, meaning it could absorb this, and that, quote, the environmental impact of this disaster is likely to be very, very modest, which he said early on. And the president said he wouldn't be working for me after any of those statements. You want to deconstruct any of that, politically or otherwise?
Well, I mean, you know, the president probably would like his agenda back, not be focusing on the oil spill as his number one priority every day when there's a lot else he wants to deal with. So to hear that, I'm sure, is extremely annoying. But I think this really points at just how awkward a position the government is. I mean, I'm sure they'd like to see Tony Hayward gotten rid of. I mean, he has been tone deaf on the PR of this, and BP has a lot of problems with the response and being open with information. But the reality is they can't. They can't do that. They can't tell them to tell that company to get rid of him. There's a limit to the amount of influence they have over them. BP is the one that has all the technology, all the remote operating vehicles at the well. They're the ones, you know, the Coast Guard may be sort of the final rubber stamp, but ultimately it's BP that has the technology and much of the techniques to deal with this. So, you know, the president can fulminate against BP and Tony Hayward all he wants, but the reality is, and eventually they're going to be bringing, I'm sure, a criminal investigation on this, but the reality is they have to cooperate for now. It's an extremely strange place, and it's really, it says a lot about where the U.S. is in regulating this industry, that it simply doesn't have the techniques, doesn't have the technology, doesn't have the expertise to do something like this on its own.
Tom McKenzie is also with us. He's a spokesman for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We've been trying to get him on a reasonable line here. And, Tom, I'm not sure if we succeeded yet, but let's try. When the oil does start to wash up and get on animals, how does the cleanup process work? How do you go about removing oil from a bird?
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good so far. Go ahead, give it a shot.
Outstanding. Thank you. Sorry, I lost you a little bit. The challenges that we have, of course, are you know, time and distance when we're dealing with recovering oiled wildlife. We're responding accurately to a number of wildlife hotline calls along the Gulf Coast. My sector is in Mississippi, Alabama, and the Florida Panhandle. We're not getting the large numbers of calls or injured or oiled wildlife at this point in our sector. Louisiana is still getting the large predominant amount of those collected alive or dead in Louisiana. So we are still in the planning and preparation mode, and I know the crews are out on the ground that I'm not really responsible for, but I heard in a briefing today that they had 1,000 folks in Alabama and 700 positioned in Florida for response. And I know from the operations briefing I saw today that I wish I could transmit to the rest of the American people and all of you in New York to show just how much is going on. And I know there's a lot of either insufficient information on the massive amount of work that the 20,000 people involved in this operation are doing. But I know it helped a whole lot, and I wish there was a way we could just broadcast the darn thing, because it's an incredibly valuable briefing for me to see. And they do it every day, talking about where they're going to attack the oil, and it is in a military fashion. It's done in a defense in depth everywhere from where the oil was coming up to the shoreline with multiple layers of defenses with different types of technology, with you know, literally hundreds and thousands of vessels out there. But again, my expertise is on the wildlife angle.
And you're broadcasting right now some of what's being done, and I'm sure people are glad to hear it. How quickly do you have to find an animal after it gets oil-soaked to have a good chance to save its life?
Obviously, the sooner the better. Any oil for any length of time on wildlife is bad news. So, and the mere act of capturing a wild animal is not good. It would be similar to having a 50-foot giant pick you up and wash you, which would not be a good idea for anybody. So
how do you do it? How do you physically do it? And what tools and what kind of detergents or whatever do you use?
Well, I'll be glad to tell you, and I'll also encourage you to go to the deepwaterhorizonresponse.com website and see it in action. You can also go to YouTube and see an oiled bird being cleaned that I videotaped in Theodore, Alabama last week, or might have been a week and a half ago, as the days are kind of joining after doing this for about 5 weeks.
What's that website again? Where can people see that, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where?
That's it on YouTube, and you can just search for it at Deep Water Horizon Response. And then scroll down the videos that are available, and those are there's also high-def stuff posted on the deepwaterhorizonresponse.com.
And listeners, we'll get
by the Coast Guard.
We'll get those links up on our page in the next few minutes.
It is a marvelous process to watch. But of course, what you have to realize is first somebody's got to call it in, so somebody's got to see the bird.
Uh-huh.
Now, we may not see all the birds or wildlife involved in this due to the massive real estate that we're talking about, over hundreds or thousands of square miles along the Gulf.
So when you say you have 20,000 people involved in this cleanup effort already, do you need even more to roam the coasts looking for animals?
What we have is trained professionals that are responding to the wildlife calls. Now, we're getting, just for an example, so you don't blow the numbers out of proportion, last night, if I look on my notes, we had, it was right around 20 calls, and we recovered about 2 live and 9 dead, and that was from about a day ago. I'm sorry, that was 18 calls, and from that, we recovered 2 live birds and 9 dead. That's over a 3-state area. Now, some of these...
It's not actually that many calls or that many birds, and not a great ratio of save to kill.
And the other thing, too, is one must realize we're collecting all wildlife here. So some of these may or may not be a direct result of the oil spill, and those will be categorized and, uh-huh, and saved for potential investigations later.
And how do you do it? How do you clean a bird?
Our Fish and Wildlife Service capture personnel that are authorized, equipped, and trained to collect wildlife will deploy to wherever that site is and attempt to capture the bird safely. They'll transport it to one of 4 rehab centers that are set up along the Gulf Coast. Louisiana, each state has one, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. They will, transfer custody of that bird to the specialists from Tri-State Bird Rescue and Research, who are authorized and permitted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to conduct this on a daily basis. They're contracted by BP in this case.
Do they handle the birds? Do they pick up a bird? Do you take a sponge to it?
The first thing they do is evaluate the bird and determine the best course of action. And what they would do generally is they let the bird sit, relax, and get over the stress of being captured. They may provide food and water or fluids either orally or intravenously, depending on the bird's physical status, and then they determine when it's safe enough to wash the bird. So they stabilize it first, basically. And then it could be within 12 hours or 24 hours or 36, when that bird is capable of sustaining the stress of a wash, then they will, usually it's a 2 or 3 person operation per bird, to hold the bird in warm water tubs at about 107 degrees, which is sufficient temperature to help break up the oil, using a Dawn dishwashing detergent mixture. And they will wash the bird carefully, and you'll see that on that video, with one person controlling the bird to make sure it doesn't injure itself or the washer. And they will maintain control, wash it several times, then they'll transfer it to the next tub, and they'll do it again, and they'll take it to the next tub and do it again. That's a process that takes 45 minutes to an hour.
It's very labor-intensive,
per
isn't
bird,
it?
And then they take it to kind of a medium-pressure wash, which is kind of like what you'd have stronger than in your kitchen sink, to wash both the soap out of that from the bird, that will allow the natural process of the feathers to rejoin their natural pattern and have air in between those feathers to begin to give it its water repellent structure that it needs to survive.
Wow, that is a very labor intensive process, and considering how many birds are out there, it sounds like you need a lot of trained people. By the way, why did you mention Dawn dishwashing liquid? Does it do a better job than Ivory or Palmolive?
Actually, they have done studies, and that's the one they choose.
There you go. No product placement here, just science and research, right?
Well, they've done a lot of research on it, and that's what they've determined best.
We've got a few minutes left with Tom McKenzie from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Brian Walsh from Time Magazine. And let's take a few more of your suggestions for what would help the president and BP and everybody else to minimize the damage from the spill. What do they need to do to clean up? Ehab in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, what you got?
Yes, good morning, Brian. I've seen some articles and videos online about using oil-eating bacteria. I'm not sure if this is a true solution or these are true videos, but they look very impressive.
Tom McKenzie, what about oil-eating bacteria?
Sorry, out of my area of expertise. I'm more of a wildlife guy, partner.
Brian, ever hear of it?
I have heard of it, yeah, and something I've always wanted to look into. I don't think it's being used, and I know, I mean, anytime you institute some kind of response like this, you risk maybe, there's got to be an outcome or perhaps a side effect as well. But I know that they've literally been getting something like literally tens of thousands of requests with ideas going to the Deepwater Horizon Unified Command Response Center. So I'd be curious. I'm sure that's got to be one of them as well.
They unleash the bacteria to eat the oil, then they unleash the antibiotics to eat the bacteria. And Shelley and Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. My suggestion was in terms of finding young people who are a part of an organization called City Year. It was started in Boston, Massachusetts. It's now located in almost every major city in the country.
We know City Year. We've done shows on City Year. So they've got ready-to-serve youth. You're saying mobilize the City Year students for this year?
Yes, make them interns that can really be hands-on and help you in whatever efforts is appropriate for them, because certain things might not be. I've just been listening, and it sounds like, you know, they would need to be very well-trained in order to...
In certain aspects of this. So thank you. And Tom, would it help to mobilize an army of youth volunteers? Would it help you guys at Fish and Wildlife? Obviously, some of the cleaning of birds that you described takes a fair amount of expertise. Could you use armies of young volunteers for other aspects?
Well, they do have a volunteer call-in number. That's at 866-448-5816. I know for anyone who handles migratory birds, that has to be a permitted person that's authorized and capable and trained to handle birds. So that would be a training issue to ensure that people are authorized to do so. So we utilized the expertise through the contractors from BP with Tri-State and International Bird Rescue and Research out of California to handle birds. We recommend strongly that people don't try this at home. It can injure you, and it could injure the bird in the process. So there's a lot of things that I've learned in this one. This is my third major oil spill that I have done in the past 5 or 6 years here down in the Southeast, and each one is different. This is definitely a larger challenge, as we have so many unknowns that we are going to be having to do a lot of research to find out what are the immediate impacts, the secondary impacts, and the tertiary impacts, and many more impacts of this entire activity. And that's one of the other things we're doing with the Fish and Wildlife Service, is conducting the natural resource damage assessments. That is a long-term legal process with all the trustees and states and the responsible party to determine the impact on the environment of not only the oil spill, but also the cleanup effort, which, as as Brian also mentioned, can have an impact in addition to the oil spill.
Okay.
And that is a multifaceted, multi-year process that is going to take years to do. But that looks at the true impact and then comes up with a restitution process that is assessed to BP to make right what has been broken.
That's very informative. A couple of things coming to us from the web. Somebody tweeted at us, pay the shrimpers to help collect spills. Lots of them are out of work, and they know the waters.
Actually, sir, they're doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're doing that now with, it's called the Vessels of Opportunity, and I've personally seen them in operation, and we also use Vessels of Opportunity actually with local captains and their crews who know the water. And they help us find the interesting locations that are spread along the coast for wildlife. And I know they're also doing it for skimming, and they're transitioning those shrimp to skimmers.
Good. And Brian Walsh from Time, Anise on our webpage, echoes something that I said, that I think you said earlier. In natural or ecological waters, doing everything to fight the problem is often worse than doing nothing. Doing everything makes us feel better. The earth doesn't care about how we feel. The only thing that matters is doing what helps and refraining from doing what harms. So, Brian, give us a last word. We have 30 seconds.
Well, that's a very good point, because right now in Louisiana, I know they're moving forward on a $350 million-plus dollar sand berm plan to put out barrier sand islands. And that's a situation where, you know, that'll look good, but a lot of scientists have a lot of doubt about whether it'll actually be worth the money and might make things work. So it's important to remember this is going to be a long, long campaign. So we need to treat that for the long haul, not just what looks good right now.
All right. And listeners, you can keep posting your ideas to help with the cleanup on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. We will make sure that these ideas are seen by somebody who could at least read them and assess them. And we do now have up Tom McKenzie's video of cleaning a bird. If you want to go to the link at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And we thank Tom McKenzie, a spokesman for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Brian Walsh, covering the spill for Time. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. We will check in now on why some Brits are angry at America for being so angry with BP. And then we will hear a fascinating excerpt from a speech that retired Justice David Souter gave last week. Some things that he probably would never have said when he was on the bench. Stay with us.